Well, it's an honor to introduce Ilonka. As most of you probably know, Ilonka Walsh is the founder of the U.S. edition of the Positive newspaper, and like the name says, it's all good news. She's got a great story of how she ran across it, but I think the first copy she ran across was the UK edition of the Positive newspaper in Ireland, and then she says, "I got to bring it to the West." And she, I think, at this point, I read somewhere online that they print about 50,000 copies of each edition of the quarterly issue. And among the many places, we certainly it was a permanent feature on our kindness table at Karma Kitchen in Berkeley. And it was just so great because usually people are reading all kinds of things and then they like are having their Karma Kitchen meal and they open up their papers and there's just good news, from beginning to the end. So it was really great. Ilonka's work has really touched many lives. But along with that, along with her formal work, she's also someone who has deep roots in activism through her parents and whom she's very close to and has learned a lot from. She's also someone, if you talk to her partner Siddhartha, he'll tell you she loves to have fun and she loves to dance. And I think at one point I asked her, who is your teacher? And she said, really, it's nature. I just feel alive when I'm in nature and connected with all our natural elements. So this is Ilonka. It's a really Ilonka, it's a real pleasure to have you on our call. And Bill and I will be co-moderating the call today. So welcome.
Thank you so much, Nipun. It's so wonderful to be seen by you in so many different great ways. And hello, everyone out there.
Yeah. So I want to jump in with a question. I'm going to cheat a little bit because we've had a conversation about this, and I just thought it was so inspiring to maybe start off with your roots, and if you could speak a little bit to your parents and the journey that they had, and how and what you learned from them, because from what I remember, your father was very politically active in Europe, and you grew up in that whole atmosphere, and social change was very much a part of it. So, if you could talk a little bit about your roots and your parents and what you've learned from them, and how it has, supported and nurtured your journey, that'd be a great way to introduce you to everybody.
Sure. I grew up in Poland in the 70s, and at that time, Poland was a communist country with, in a way, a very different communist country because Poles always had a very strong connection to spirituality and their land, and that in some ways made Poland stand apart from other countries that were taken over by the Soviets. And my parents were both working class. In a way, it feels kind of funny to say that because I was the one generation in Poland that really grew up in a classless society. And I cannot stress that enough. It is such a privilege to actually grow up in a place where material wealth was not something that would put people aside. We all pretty much lived in similar living situations. All the kids went to public schools. I'll never forget two of my closest friends, a boy and a girl. They used to sit together in school, and her mom, she was the brightest kid in school, and her mom was a janitor. And the boy she used to sit with, his mom was a judge. And they lived in the same building. There was really no economical difference between them. And it was just so wonderful, you know, that kids could mingle like that and not be separated by some artificial means. And my parents always had a really good sense of justice, and I am very grateful to them for that. My mom, for example, she somehow, I don't know how, but she instilled in me this sense of never fearing or bowing down to authority. And she did it in a really cool way. She would always say, you know, those people, you know, wearing uniforms or, you know, being some kind of higher up officials, you know, they're just kind of playing a game, but they're really normal people like everyone else. And then she would, the way she would approach people, you know, I could see that. She would just go straight to the heart. You know, you could see people being really puzzled, like, well, don't you see this is a police officer and you're supposed to, you know, talk to this person in a different way, blah, blah, blah. But she never did. It's almost like she never really paid attention to what they were supposed to be reenacting. And my father, pretty early on when I was, let's see, well, the major changes in Poland happened in the late 70s. Those changes are what in the end resulted in the end of the Cold War and the taking down of the Berlin Wall. It seems like it all started in Poland with the Solidarity Movement that my father was involved with. He was one of the founders of the movement in our city. And it was just some of the most hopeful times in my life. I remember being taken to demonstrations by my dad, you know, as a small kid, and I'm just so grateful that he did that, where on one hand there was some military presence with water cannons and stuff like that, just to scare people away. And then you could see the whole population, just everyone out on the streets, feeling so much hope that really with this people power, change can happen for the better. And as a young girl, I witnessed that, and I have witnessed those changes. And I think it's just for the rest of my life instilled in my heart the sense of what is possible and that we really can create change in the world.
Yeah, that's beautiful. If I can put you on the spot, one of the stories that you shared about your mom, and again, it kind of goes into the sort of ambience of activism that you were raised in. But if I'm not mistaken, there were the cops knocked on your door one morning and trying to arrest your dad. Can you share that story? Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I do. After about 2 years of this solidarity movement prospering in Poland, a martial law was imposed on the country. And so all the leaders of the movement, or most of them, were getting arrested. And my family kind of knew that it was just a matter of time before my dad gets taken away. And also, so happens that my father, at the time, was running an underground newspaper, which was a highly dangerous thing to do during the martial law. You know, this paper basically was igniting hope to people, saying, you know, we're still here and change is still possible, even though we had to go underground with the movement. And it only dawned on me recently that I'm actually running a newspaper right now that is inspiring hope as well. Anyway, so he didn't get arrested for the first year or so. And then one morning, like Nipun, you mentioned, a knock on the door early in the morning and police comes in And so we kind of all knew that my dad is going to get arrested. And one thing that I didn't mention to you is that my dad actually, the night before, was reviewing some documents that he wanted to use for his newspaper, and they were very confidential, the pieces of information about some people detained. And have those things been found by the police, he would have ended up staying in jail probably for like maybe 6 years or longer, where he ended up being put away for, I think, 7 months on no charges. But so what happened is there are these big police officers, and we know no matter what's going to happen, my dad is going to get arrested. And my mom, holding my little baby brother in her arms, says to them, "You know, it's so early in the morning. I bet you men haven't had breakfast yet. Why don't you come and join us for breakfast?" And they were all stunned. I'm sure that they have not received such a welcome ever, because normally what happens is they come into a house, they search the whole house for anything that they can nail you on, and then they take you know, the person away. And so they said, "Well, thank you. That's a really kind offer, but we will decline." But they were so moved that they did not raid our house like they normally do. They were very careful, and they did not find anything. That piece of information, which was sitting by my father's bed, I was actually able to hide under my sweater and smuggle out of the house and take it to my grandmother's house. And I think probably because of my mom's initial kindness, they kind of gave us a little more flexibility. So under the pretext that I was getting ready to go to school and then leaving for school, they let me leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really empowering event in my life. There I was, 10 years old, and just knowing that I really helped my dad a lot by doing this.
Wow, that's awesome. I love that story. Bill is also on the call, and I think he's going to take the next question.
Yes, thank you. Hi, Ilonka.
Hi, Bill.
Yeah, I think we've met on Wednesday nights. Glad to be able to participate in this. I guess you've already answered this question largely, but I'm curious, what was the particular impetus that made you decide a positive newspaper was important to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't seen a newspaper like this in the States. In fact, I have never heard of positive news until I came across one when I was in Ireland, and that was the one from the UK, the original positive news, the mother of the positive news. I just knew that there is lots of wonderful, uplifting, positive information in the world that just never makes it into the mainstream newspapers. And at one point myself, I almost stopped following the mainstream media, even though I used to read the newspaper every day. And then I just realized that it made me feel really down, really hopeless, and disempowered. And so when I first heard of this concept of creating, that someone is actually creating positive news, I thought, oh, this is a really great antidote to all the negative news in the world. I think it's just so great to bring a balance and inform people and celebrate people who are creating change and give great ideas of how we can create more change in the world.
Didn't you have an amazing story when you were first starting out with this newspaper of how you ran into the Schwartz and how they guided your journey? Can you share a little bit about that?
I'm sorry, how I ran into who?
Didn't you run into a stranger that happened to tell you, you know, he was giving out food, and at that time you had no idea, and then you just had this wonderful connection with him that ended up being a lifelong connection, I think.
Oh, yes, yes, Kurt, and respecting our elders, that's right.
Yes.
Well, about, gosh, it would be maybe 3 years ago or so, we moved our main positive news operation from the East Coast here to the San Francisco Bay Area. And one day I was doing something that I really enjoy doing, and that is hitchhiking. I have committed myself to living without a car for A, for environmental reasons, and then B, it's just such a great and humble way to connect with people and learn their stories on the road. So I was hitchhiking out of my little town, and this van stops. And so I get in, and this wonderful man, Kurt, starts sharing different things about his life. And he's also, I think he started by sharing about this organization, Respecting Our Elders, that he has been involved with. And I thought it was such a phenomenal article for Positive News that I then invited him and his partner, Ruth, for an interview so that I could publish a story about them. And this is one of the stories that made it to the Daily Good. And so fast, we became friends. It was actually really easy to befriend these two. I, in fact, asked them if they would adopt me into their family. I know a good thing when I can see when I see one. And so Kurt also was really taken by Positive News and my mission and the vision for the world. So he said, "Look, one way that I can support you is we run this organization called Respecting Our Elders, which provides free food, free good quality food to people who need it. And I know that you're running this newspaper on a shoestring budget, so I'm going to make sure that every week you have enough food to eat." And so for the last 3 years, Kurt shows up about twice a week, and he basically feeds me, and I feed Positive News.
Wow.
Yes, he's and he also on top of that, he helps with the final editing of the paper. He's a wonderful editor.
Wow, I mean that's a Positive News story right there. Right?
It is.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Thank you, Bill.
The listeners or the readership that you get, do they tend to stick with the publication? I mean, I think most of us long for more positive news stories, but the negative news just seems to have such a fascination. And even myself, I find I often tend to gloss over positive stories and get fixated on the negative. So I'm just curious whether your readership tends to stick with you year after year.
Well, that's a really good question. And in a way, I don't actually know for sure. I'm not the one who is handling our subscription side of things. However, we do have some long-term supporters and subscribers who have been with us for all these years, I think almost 9 years now. I would say that it goes both ways. Some people like to just try on the newspaper, and I feel like oftentimes when they don't renew the subscription, it's not really because they don't believe in the paper, but it might just be that, you know, they may forget or they just move on to other things in their lives.
I mean, there's... Go ahead. Sorry, Ilonka.
Siddhartha here is motioning to me. I think he wants to add something to this, if that's all right with you.
Yes, of course.
Well, I do the outreach and the distribution handling, and a story just pops into my mind. When we had the fundraising, we suddenly got a check of $1,000 and a letter with it, handwritten, and we had been in contact with that woman for quite a few years, and she would always get bundles, even to distribute the paper locally. And she writes in her letter, brings tears to my eyes, that she is 92 years old.
Wow.
And she has been an activist for all her life. And her husband bought a big piece of land because they felt that piece of land should not go to the developers. And so they kept that piece of land. The husband passed away, and she continued doing this and just was so taken by positive news. And then she heard that we might not be able to publish, she sent us a check of $1,000 and said, I want this paper to continue. And she put actually on top of that another little check and saying, well, this is for sponsoring a bundle. Please, you know, I'm 92, but I love this paper and I love to spread it. So send me another bundle and I will distribute it in my local area. So that's just one of many other stories along those lines.
And that kind of takes me to a question that I've been wanting to ask you and also have you elaborate on, which is around... How you view money and how you relate to money, because you are, both of you are two people that I find are very steeped in generosity. You're constantly thinking of giving, and as a result, you're constantly receiving. And so many times you may not be receiving necessarily in the financial sort of currency way, but in so many other ways, you know. And I wonder if you can speak a little bit to that, not just at a personal level, but even for positive news, you know, and what has it meant to engage in fundraising? I mean, does it feel natural? Does it not feel natural? And if it doesn't feel natural, how do you sustain it? Because you clearly have sustained it for so many years. So it'd be great if you could share some reflections on money itself.
Mm, thank you. That's such a good topic. Money. Well, when I first got into publishing positive news, I knew really nothing about finances, about how to put it all together, about fundraising. All I knew is that this is really a good thing, something that will probably really serve our humanity. And so I just jumped right into it, and everything just kind of fell into place bit by bit. And I wouldn't say that I have learned a whole lot about money since then. And in a way, or I would say I haven't learned a whole lot in the conventional way. And maybe this is why we have been able to publish and prosper for so long, you know, despite the fact that so many other printed media outlets have really downsized or folded altogether. So when I was first getting into it, well, for me, publishing positive news is very much It's a gift. It's a gift of love. It's a spiritual practice. You know, when I'm really into doing something, I don't really think whether I will have enough money to do it. I just kind of throw myself into it. And I guess I have this faith that if this is something that's really useful and meant to happen, the universe will, you know, will make it easy, and it will be so. And so, and when I say that, I don't mean that, you know, I throw in an idea and just kind of sit back and then, you know, see things arrange themselves. I do definitely try all kinds of different things to make sure that, you know, positive news can continue and is financially, you know, financially able to do that. However, there isn't this charge attached to it, so that, say, you know, part of our revenue comes from advertising. When I approach someone to see if they would like to place an ad, I don't have this kind of an attachment where if you say no, that is going to create some kind of a negative rift, negative ripple, you know, in between us, in the air, in the universe. And I am, in my conversation with someone, say, around advertising, I am much more likely to encourage someone to actually say no, because I see how people really struggle with saying no, especially if, you know, their heart really says, this is not a right thing for me to do, but how do I say no? So oftentimes when I talk to someone, I first kind of coach them on how to say no to me, just in case they really would like to say no. And yeah, then, you know, if they do want to say yes, then, you know, they're of course welcome to do that too. And that has been a really wonderful and a really helpful way for me to try to generate funding. You know, like, we don't have tons of advertising. Actually, you know, it's really a handful. However, all that is in there has settled in really nicely, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
As far as other forms, as far as, you know, asking people for contributions, this last 3 months have definitely been quite a learning experience for me, because, like you mentioned, it really is in my nature to fulfill someone's wish if they are in need of something, rather than me asking for something, you know, in this case, asking for money so we can continue printing. And it has been kind of a fine line. I really don't, I know that I usually ask someone just once, and
yeah,
I feel like at this point, I've reached a healthy limit of how much I can ask. And then at this point, I'm just kind of sitting back to see how things will unfold on their own.
Mm.
So I guess in the big picture, I feel like money is just one factor of all of this. There are many other aspects, and
I mean, it's one of those questions that I, you know, it's a question that may not have a soundbiteable response, and I think that's perfectly fine. I wanted to ask you one more question before opening up the lines, which was around this idea of, you know, contrasting negative and positive news. A lot of people look at positive news and say, okay, well, that's naive, because if you look in the world, there is negative news. You know, how do you respond to that? Do you find that positive news should be in balance with the negative news, and that it just isn't there, which is why we need to have more positive news? Or do you think Do you think if we just focus on positive, we'll have more positive, and the negative will start to, sort of disappear? How do you respond to people when they say, well, in reality, you have positive and negative, so we shouldn't you can't just have, like, positive news?
Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, ever since I started, I would expect more people to ask me this question, and it really hasn't been all that much, and I really like engaging people on this level. Most people who do ask the question, I feel like they haven't really read the paper. Once people sit down and read, you know, at least three articles, they get a sense that what we're doing is we are exposing some problem oftentimes, but then we're offering a solution. And, you know, that's very different than just ignoring things that are negative. And then also, I do think that we provide a balance where, you know, of course there are negative things happening in the world all the time. One, it depends how the negative is presented. And it seems like our society is just so addicted to the negative information. You know, you can present something that's, you can present anything in a way that you're really dramatizing it and really emphasizing the anguish and the negative, or you can present the same thing in a much less dramatic, hurtful way, and at the same time also focus on the solution. A thought just crossed my mind as I was explaining this. Let's see if it will decide to turn around and tell me what it is that it wants to tell you.
I'm sure we've got like plenty of questions to make a turnaround, so don't worry. We'll go on to the next question, and then we'll come back to this. So we have opened up the queue. I want to start with Amit, and then we already have a person in the queue, so we'll go with that. Again, hit star 6 if you want to get in on the queue. Amit, take it away.
Great, thank you. Hi, Lanka. You know, I guess sort of reporting on positive news for as long as you have, what has been the impact on you personally in terms of just your overall consciousness changing? Again, you know, and this comes back to, you know, what some would consider always seeing negative news, but not only just reading positive news or seeing it and searching for it and surrounding yourself with it, what has been the impact to you personally?
In terms of reporting positive news for creating this newspaper for as long as you have, you know, what has been the impact to you personally from, I guess, sort of your overall consciousness? You know, because you think about, you know, how oftentimes most of us, you know, we see our nightly news or the newspapers, it's, you know, this sort of this war or this sort of fiasco, financial crisis, whatever. But to really embed yourself in just putting out positive news, not only just from reading it, but from writing it, from going out and seeking it, what has it done to the way that you think on a day-to-day level?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that I have one of the best jobs in the world. And exactly because of some of these reasons you mentioned, there is just so much positive news out there. One of our biggest dilemmas is actually how to fit it all in our newspaper. I tell people that we could publish a phone book-sized newspaper every quarter filled with positive news. And, you know, when I first started, I really didn't know how was I going to fill up a newspaper with positive information. And I guess over the years, because of this practice where I really fine-tuned my antennas towards the positive much more, it's just flowing in all the time. And it's wonderful. I mean, whenever I go to an event, say there's a conference, there's a panel, people ask all kinds of questions. And then the one question that I get to ask is, what do you find hopeful in the world today? And, you know, and that usually just completely changes the whole energy of the space. The speaker completely lights up. Like, I've asked senators this question, and incredible. And then I would get wonderful content for positive news. So, yeah, it has been a joy.
So one of the senators have to say when you said what do you find hopeful? Any interesting responses?
Let me see. This was actually several years ago in New York. There were some proceedings towards the impeachment of George Bush, and. So I'm sitting through this conference, and people are just so upset and frustrated and blah, blah, blah. And then I asked him this question. I said, so in light of this situation, what do you find hopeful? And and that became the headline of, like, all the newspapers around. You know, he actually came out and created this beautiful vision for what he would like to see happen in the world. And, you know, everything really starts with a vision. And it just really shifted the dynamics from a place of victimhood to a place of empowerment.
So, I've got to jump in here. I got to ask you, what do you find hopeful today?
I woke up this morning and I remembered my dream. And this is what happened in my dream. You know, some kind of a confusing situation. There's some houses that I sort of recognize. And I'm walking into this one house in order to borrow something from someone who I sort of know. And the person at the door turned out to be someone whom I didn't know, and he seemed pretty scary and unsafe. And in that instant, I remembered that this is just a dream, that I'm dreaming. And we instantly became friends. And I woke up with that really strong sense in my heart that, you know, our whole life, this whole waking world or dreaming world, is just like that. If you just remember to lighten up, that this, in some sense, is also just a dream, anything is possible. So I felt really inspired by this dream, and I know that it is going to have ripple effects in my waken what life, waken day.
Wow.
Thank you. We're going to go to the next caller here.
Hi, this is Yumi calling in from Vancouver. Thank you very much, Ilonka, and everyone else on the call. I think you touched on my question, but I wonder if you would elaborate a little bit more about where you find your news. Do people send it to you? Do you go looking for it? Do you see it all around you and write it? Or, you know, what, you said there's so much news that you can't fit it all in one newspaper. Where does it all come from?
Thank you, Amy. It's so good to have you here today. In several different ways. People do write us and give us suggestions for content. I also do quite a bit of research myself and then assign articles to our whole array of volunteer writers. And also, we are a part of Positive News International Network. There are several other Positive News editions throughout the world. And so we share more of the international content with each other.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And do you have a lot of reporters that go out and or freelancers or volunteers even that'll say, look, when you find a good news story and you don't have anybody to report it, just you know, write to me and I can go and do it.
Yes, we do have freelance volunteers like that.
Yeah, that'd be great. And are you always, is that something that people can always help out with, or is that something that you have to go through a longer screening process and be more connected to Positive News before you can get involved?
It depends. I mean, usually I ask for some writing sample, and it's always helpful to have some previous writing experience, especially article writing. But if it's a young person, then we pretty much always say yes. We really want to empower young people to participate in creating positive change in the world. And if they're excited to write for us, then, you know, they've got us. Regardless of their writing skills. We've had, for example, we had a high school student from Ukraine, and she was an exchange student in New York at that time, and she really wanted to write for us. So we finally figured, even though, you know, her English was her second language and she was still in the process of learning quite a lot, but we just figured out a way to make sure that she could get involved and she could write, and it all worked out really well.
Great. We'll go to the next caller.
Hi, Ilonka. This is Audrey. I was wondering, of all the news stories that you've encountered, do any stand out to you?
Yes. Oh, gosh. So many. Let me see. I remember several years ago, we went to the first World Peace Forum in Vancouver, and there we were interviewing Dennis Kucinich, a congressman from Ohio, and I wasn't the one doing the interview. My colleague Lee was, and she just relayed to me that so in the room, there was Dennis Kucinich, his bodyguard, and Lee. And as Lee was asking him questions about his vision for his Department of Peace, so as he was talking, Lee started to cry, and the bodyguard started to cry. They were so touched by this man's powerful vision. And so then that's one of the articles that we published that I find to be one of the most profound. More recently, a story about a German grandmother who decided that she wanted to live without money. So she has lived without money so far for maybe the last 16 years and just bartering with people. That has been quite a story.
Wow, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is just want to let folks know that if you have a question for Ilonka, you can hit star 6 and you will get in on the queue. Ilonka, while I wait for other callers to jump on, I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit about the vision of Positive News. I mean, you said you have a quarterly paper, and you said that you could fill a phone book if you needed to. And I'm wondering if, you know, what you see as a vision. I mean, is the vision towards making it bigger or making it more frequent or going more online or none of the above and something else? What do you see? Or is it more like what Asha Brown just wowed us with by opening this call, which is to go to different mediums, maybe audio and video? So your thoughts on the vision of Positive News.
Mm-hmm. Well, our vision of bringing hope into the world, exemplifying solutions, and inspiring people to action can really happen in several different ways. So far, our main way is this more of an old-fashioned printed newspaper format. We have been thinking and planning more and more of creating positive news in a video format, having 10-minute video vignettes, maybe 3 stories in each video.
Oh, interesting.
And maybe having just little snippets of interviews. So that has been on a back burner, kind of just germinating for the last 2 years or so. It hasn't happened yet. We're waiting for all the right ingredients. And yeah, we do have more of an online presence. We are now doing positive newsletters that go out twice a month that sort of have some of the stories that are in the printed issue, but also more content that never makes it into the newspaper. I do get especially excited about this video idea. So I can see how that might be something, if we do expand into a different area, that's what's going to happen. I do, you know, having said that, I do really like the idea of a printed newspaper, and we do get feedback from people who are really thankful that we still continue this format. Even though I know a lot of media is switching over to the internet more and more, this is what we're doing at the moment.
Oh, that's great. We have a couple of questions lined up, so I'm just going to go to the next caller.
Hi, thank you so much for being on the call. This is Michelle calling from Santa Fe. I really love listening to you and what you're doing. Thank you so much. I have a question. I have been working on building curriculum for social global responsibility and transformational global leadership. And I would be very interested to hear, I was interested in the fact that you don't have a car and talking about the German woman who's been living without money. That's an area that's very interesting to me, and I'm experimenting personally and looking at how, what the impact might be on humanity, exploring more of that. I would love to hear what you think is the most important thing that human beings need to learn to be a responsible global citizen, and what have you learned out of your own experiment in downsizing what you're doing or getting connected to responsible global citizenship?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michelle. I really like this one quote by Albert Einstein, and it really tends to go hand in hand with how I live. He basically said that one of the most important things that we humans have to decide is whether this universe is a friendly place. And I do believe that the universe, you know, my universe here and the universe at large is a friendly place. And I can see that how, as a result of that belief, it creates all these ripples in my life, because I come from the perspective that there's just a lot of friendliness around. Even in the face of animosity, I do go for the friendliness. Now, as far as living, you know, so that to me, you ask, you know, what is the most important thing? And so it's this concept of friendliness, whether the universe is a friendly place. When it comes to downsizing and living simply, once I don't even know if I ever decided to downsize my life. I just have always felt drawn to living in simplicity. And the more simple my life would be, like, for example, before moving to California, I have spent 3 years living in a little cabin on 200 acres of land preserve. I was renting this little cabin completely off the grid, without electricity, without running water, with just a stream running behind the cabin and a pond. And I felt like I was one of the wealthiest people in the world, even though I was living so simply. And so here, when I moved to West Marin and decided to live without a car, one of the greatest gifts that came from that decision is it really allowed me to know who my neighbors are and to really create a sense of community. Like, I really felt like I belonged because, I would rely on my neighbors and strangers, and then they over time got to rely on me because I got to model to them this idea of, needing something, needing a ride, and then they were much more likely to then express to me if they needed something in return. So living without a car was just such a great way to build community. And whenever people ask me, do I have any suggestions of how to build community in my area, I say, get rid of your car.
Thank you.
You're
That's
welcome.
Great. We'll go to the next caller.
Hi. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us. My name is Robin, and I'm here with my friend Audrey. And you've just shared a little bit of your background, but we were actually wondering what exactly it was. I mean, maybe you've been writing good news your whole life, but we're wondering if maybe you had, like, a turning point where suddenly you realized this is what I should be doing and what you were doing before that point. If that is the case.
Hi, Robin.
Ooh, good question.
The turning point. Yeah, I think there was a turning point. The turning point was actually 9/11.
Oh.
We, prior to 9/11, we started spreading around the UK edition of Positive News around the area where I lived. And then 9/11 happened. And somehow, out of that sense of huge shock and numbness to news overall, I remember people would, and at that time I even felt like, wow, okay, this is the end of positive news. People would come up to me and they would say, we really need positive news now more than ever. Will you please start printing it, here? Will you please start creating our own version of positive news? And the more I thought about it, the more I could see that they were right. And somehow there was this momentum. And I would tell people, well, okay, I'll do it if you help me. And there were enough who were interested in helping that it did get this momentum going, and we were able to get our first issue out, and then the second issue followed, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for the question.
Yeah, that's great. We'll go to our next caller.
Thank you, Nipun. Prakash calling from Heart of the Bay. Thank you so much, Ilonka. I have one quick reflection. Thank you for being the positive you wish to see in the world. Thank you so much, and wish all the best for the positive news.
Thank you. Thank
That's
you so
great.
Much. It really means a lot to me.
I'm sure you you get lots of those kinds of blessings. I mean, do you feel constantly mean, what is your state of mind as you're you know, putting this newspaper out, which is no easy task, and on a continual basis, you must get so many of these silent blessings and thank yous. And on the other hand, I'm sure you have the usual struggles of just keeping up and in a world that is going more and more online. How do you stay anchored, and where do you stay anchored in that spectrum?
That's a good question. I think it's just that initial spark that made me decide, yes, I want to do this. I feel like up to this day, this is what anchors me, this belief that this positive news and my actions are really of good service. And, you know, I do know that on a personal level, it's really important to me to take good rest around what I'm doing. I mean, I'm publishing positive news, so it's kind of like all aspects of making it happen need to be positive in order for the final result to be positive news, you know, rather than, say, having a frustrated, angry person putting together positive news. That just doesn't make sense. And so, yeah, it's just this belief in the goodness of the world, in the goodness of humanity, in the fact that really, sometimes I say that it's the love that's in between the words, you know, that's really the message. And on a more of a technical level, yeah, there are all kinds of surprises all the time that we need to figure out. Like we just lost our webmaster for our website. So we just published a new edition and we're waiting to put up the new content on the web. But we don't have a webmaster. Our wonderful webmaster isn't well enough physically to continue. And I know something will show up. Right now, I'm not quite sure how, but, you know, it's different things like that. And then, you know, there's the money aspect of things. If you asked me 2 months ago, I would say, well, I don't really know if we'll be able to publish the fall issue, but right now it's looking like we will have enough money, at least for the fall. And so it's kind of like going in for this ride and doing the best I can in the process and enjoying myself and reminding myself to spread as much love and goodness as I can.
Do you have a practice that helps you stay anchored regularly, or maybe it's just a matter of going out and walking in your neighborhood? But is there a particular practice, maybe a spiritual practice, that helps you stay centered?
Well, my most immediate answer would be meditation. I do meditate, but I think in a bigger sense, it's really feeling connected to all of it. And I know that for myself, being outside, the place where I live is just surrounded by beautiful nature. And being outside certainly helps me stay connected to myself, to my core, and to all the living beings all around. So I would say that's the most nurturing part.
That's great. We have one last question, and then Amit will close it out.
Okay. Hi, Alanka. This is Nayla. Yeah, I was just curious to know if you still, you know, read, listen to, watch mainstream media, and if you do, from time to time, you know, a lot of it can be cynical or negative. How does that affect you differently now than, you know, before 9/11, or, you know, before you immersed yourself in this publication? And then in the different ways that it affects you, how does that also influence the stories that you know, you're able to attract, or the way that you write your stories. That question makes sense.
Yes. Thank you, Bella. You know, I do follow the mainstream media here and there. One of my favorite things, actually, is to have a trusted friend follow the mainstream media for me and then present it to me in a way that is kind of reduced to the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think over the years, I have been able to notice in more detail actually what happens to me when I read some really hurtful piece of information. And, you know, whether it's the news or, you know, it could be a violent movie, which I hardly ever do these days, I'm able to actually notice certain parts of me can first kind of cringe and then shut down. And for me, this is the most dangerous part of exposing people to really negative information. I mean, of course, there are some really horrific things happening in the world, and of course, we want people to do something about that. What I have noticed, and this is also backed up by research that I have followed over the years, is that when exposed to hurtful information, certain parts of our brain just literally shut down. They cannot take it anymore. And so then it creates this sense of, you know, overload and indifference. And what I want to do is, you know, I want people to, when they are exposed to hurtful stuff, to not shut down, but to be able to process it in a constructive way that would lead towards creating change. And I'm so glad you asked this question, because that's what I wanted to mention earlier, where that thought just went one way, and now I'm bringing them back. Well, so this is why I try to maintain a certain balance when having an article where, you know, say it's about major clear cut in the Amazon. There it is, you know, very hurtful information. I try to then provide enough positive information, empowering, powerful, empathetic information, so that the reader will actually be able to stay with the solution and the empowerment part of it, rather than just latch on to the negative. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Beautiful. I still have a few burning questions, but I'm just going to have to hold on to them for Ilonka Part 2. Amit, if I can request you to just do the final, thank Ilonka and do our final minute of gratitude, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. And I definitely felt a few burning questions arise there as well. Ilonka, thank you so much for being with us today, for sharing what you shared. I mean, there was just such a wealth of information that came our way, you know, from you sharing
You're faded out.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I was going to say there was such a wealth of information that kind of came through, whether it was stories about your parents to just how Positive News got started and your inspiration and really the way that you lived your life. And so just on behalf of everyone that was on the call and to those that will end up reading about it, thank you very much.